Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When we started Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet, it was just a conversation between two friends about true crime over a glass of wine. It quickly grew into a passion project, and Melissa and I transformed this hobby into a mission.
Our mission is to be a trusted resource while empowering others to use their voice and create a positive change for victims nationwide. After a year of covering different genres of cases, Whitney and I chose to narrow our focus and take a journey covering cold and unsolved cases in season 3.
While our main focus will be unresolved cases, we will still be exploring the fascinating world of cults. So we invite you to pop a cork and grab a glass because we have work to do.
Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet is streaming on all major podcast platforms.
Hey everybody, I hope you're doing well. I've got one more live show to share with you this week, and then we'll get back to some more cases. This live show is an extra special one that I am so grateful and happy that I had the opportunity to participate in. I was invited by the wonderful ladies at Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet to discuss the Moab newlywed murders live at CrimeCon on the expo stage. This was a huge deal, and I'm super excited that I got to do it. Definitely an honor to be asked to be a part of that. I really hope you enjoy listening to myself and the ladies from Cults, Crimes, Cabernet as we discuss the Moab Newlywed Murders.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah.
Okay. Happy Crime Con. Oh, that's really loud. My name is Melissa. I am from Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet. If you have not heard of us, we have a booth right back there.
I'm Whitney, the other half, and that's I'm the loud one. And we, like Melissa said, we're right back there. We are a weekly episodic podcast. We cover everything from cults to kidnappings to murder, everything in between. Once a quarter, we physically go to locations where people have gone missing or have been murdered and help families however we can. Foot searches, pass out flyers, all those types of things. We usually drink a glass of wine while we are covering a case, but it's 9 o'clock in the morning, and even though this is Vegas, we decided to switch to mimosas. So we might be in for a name change of murder, mayhem, and mimosas.
Sounds good. It's before noon, it's that name. Afternoon, it's Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet.
And, whoa, hi. I'm Eric Carter Lundin, the host of True Consequences podcast. It's a true crime show based out of New Mexico. I started the show as a love letter to my baby brother who was murdered 35 years ago. I'm still fighting for justice for him, and I created the podcast to help other families in my state who are looking for justice. Right now, I'm in the middle of covering the Dylan Redwine case, deep dive, 15 episodes. And super excited to be here with these two amazing ladies.
Okay.
Thank you. And today we're covering the case of Kylan Carroll Schulte and Crystal Turner, the Moab newlyweds.
Kylan Carroll Schulte was only 24 years old when her life tragically ended. But going back in time before this horrible day, let's talk about who Kylan was. She was born to Sean Paul and Valerie Schulte on September 15th of 1996 in Colorado. She was described as a magical person, kind, approachable, what a lot of people described as a gentle presence. And just looking at some of her pictures, you could tell she had this aura, this glow about her. Kylan then, from Colorado, moved to Montana. She ended up graduating from Billings Senior High School. She worked as a welder at one point in her life, which just is hard work for a very petite girl like her. In 2015, tragedy first struck her family when her brother, Mac, was shot and killed by a friend. And their father stated, Sean Paul, that he had a very hard time overcoming that, getting through all of that tragedy. It was in January of 2016 that Kylan actually moved to Moab, Utah. She started working at the Moonflower Community Cooperative shortly after she moved there. It is a natural food store right there in the heart of Moab.
Crystal Michelle Turner, Kylan's beloved wife of 4 short months, was also killed that day. Crystal was also known as Crystal Beck. She was born to the parents of Obi and Beverly Turner on December 30th, 1982, in Hot Springs, Arkansas. She was one of 5 kids, 4 brothers, Greg, Randy, Christopher, and Cody, and at the time of her death, she had 3 children, Isaac, Olivia, and Savannah. Crystal was always described as outgoing, cheerful, and she loved to make others laugh. She loved the outdoors and everything that that includes, hiking, fishing, camping. She had just recently began the onboarding process with a restaurant there in Moab, the Trailhead Public House. She hadn't quite started working, but she was getting ready to start her first shift.
On March 13, 2019, Kylan and Crystal started dating after they met on a hike. The two were smitten with each other very quickly and got married in April of 2021. The couple married in Arkansas in a treehouse. And I can't imagine a more perfect place for these two people who love the outdoors to tie their union together and make a vow to live their life in love. They returned to Moab, and the women transformed a van into a camper-type trailer so they could become full-time campers. They lived in this with their pet rabbit, Ruth, up until the day of their murder.
Kylan and Crystal were camping in the beautiful Lasalle Mountains just outside of the Arches National Park. When you talk about Moab, Utah, the Arches National Park is what my mind immediately goes to. Those beautiful red rocks with all those arch formations. The Lasalle Range sits just southeast of Moab and north of the town of Lasalle. There are three clusters of mountains separated by passes, with the highest elevation being Mount Pele, and that's about 12,000 feet above sea level. The main city of Moab is known for its stunning views. It is still on the smaller side with only a population of about 5,000. The area has been inhabited since 10,000 BC. It's a long time. There are thriving tourist industry because it's just so beautiful. The Arches National Park has more than 1.6 million visitors every year. One fact that I did find interesting was that the arches actually have a life cycle. They form, they grow, they collapse. 43 arches have collapsed since 1977. National parks govern themselves. It's a bit difficult to pull out the crime rate statistics, but in Moab, it is a bit higher than the national average. So there is quite a bit of crime, probably tourist and that type of thing. Moab has about 8.76 per 1,000 residents, and the Utah average is only 2.59 out of those 1,000 residents. So it's pretty, it's got a bit more going on there. Your chances of becoming a victim of a violent crime are 1 in 114, excuse me. More than 92% of communities in Utah have a lower crime rate than that.
On August 13th, 2021, Kylan and Crystal met up with some friends at around 6 p.m. at Woody's Tavern. Woody's Tavern is a local bar and grill off of South Main Street, and it's known for that laid-back vibe, cheap drinks, and you could just kind of hang out and chill. They were seen on surveillance cameras talking to a friend about some weirdo camping next to them. They said he was really intimidating. He showed up with food in a car parked just way too close to their campsite, and they were very unnerved by it. At one point, they have decided to go ahead and move their camp. They just hadn't had the opportunity to yet. Now, in a horrible moment of foreshadowing, Kylan told this friend and was quoted as saying, "If something happens to us, we were murdered." But then after that conversation, they continued to laugh and joke with their friend about this strange individual. Kylan and Crystal left Woody's around 9:30 p.m., The friend that they had met there was unsure if they were headed back to their campsite or if they were going to another location. But the idea of Crystal and Kylan searching for a new campsite was discussed, but they didn't feel that it was going to happen in the middle of the night, so surely they just went back to their campsite, went to bed, called it an evening.
The next morning on August 14th, Kylan was scheduled to work a 5:30 a.m. shift as a cashier at the Moonflower Co-op. Crystal would also be missing work as she was in the hiring process at the restaurant. This was an immediate red flag for the family because they knew that the couple would never miss a shift of work unless there was something incredibly wrong. And after not hearing from the girls, Kylan's father, Sean Paul, who lives in Montana, posted on social media that he couldn't get in contact with them. He called hospitals, jails, and came up empty-handed.
On August 15th, the couple was actually reported missing to the Grand County Sheriff's Office. Initially, police, of course, thought that the couple may have left town looking for another camping spot. Family members disagreed immediately because they had left town. They would have told their family members, and they would have left in their only vehicle, which was a Kia Sorento. They would have left behind. They had a 1987 van and a Harley Davidson. And all of that, those two vehicles were still there, both of which were parked at the McDonald's. Family felt confident that they would never leave these items behind because it was their most valuable possessions.
On August 17th, Sean Paul turned to a nearby family friend, Cindy Sue Hunter. She agreed to gather up some supplies and head out in the morning to look for the girls. Sean Paul again took to social media, saying they'd been missing for over 4 days now, and this was early Wednesday morning.
On the morning of August 18th, Cindy Sue headed out to look for Kylan and Crystal. She first found the Econoline van and the Harley at McDonald's. There was nothing there that caused any concern. So then she took the rural roads in the area and stopped to talk to all the local campers and hikers. Cindy Sue stumbled upon the Kia Sorento at the campsite, and she noticed that things were laying all over the campground.
Cindy also noticed that Ruth, the couple's pet bunny, had run out of food and water. Knowing then that she indeed found the couple's campsite, she phoned the police and then Sean Paul, the father. While she's waiting for authorities to arrive and she's talking to Kylan's dad on the phone, she's continuing to walk around the campsite looking for anything, possible clues of where the two could be.
Just a few short yards away in the river, Cindy Sue saw the arms and torso of a body in the creek. She said that it was all she needed to know that without a doubt it was Kylan. She immediately turned and ran back to her vehicle and locked her doors because she was scared for her own life. Cindy decided to drive back to the main road to make sure police could not miss her location. She waited for 45 minutes to an hour for the authorities to arrive. Once they once they arrived on site, they confirmed that they indeed found the body of Kylan Schulte, and just a few feet away, Crystal Turner was also found. Both women had suffered multiple gunshot wounds to the back, sides, and chest. Both women were partially undressed, and the bodies were taken for autopsy, where the state medical examiner stated that there was no forcible sexual assault on either victim.
And the Grand County Sheriff's Office was able to gather quite a bit of evidence at the scene. They found the couple's tent, personal items from both the tent and the car, DNA, shell casings, and bullet fragments consistent with gunshot wounds that were found on the bodies of the victims. They were even able to secure video from nearby properties. After the women were found, police noted that both women had multiple gunshot wounds to the back, side, and chest. A news station interviewed Kylan's aunt, Bridget Calvert, and she was quoted as saying, "They said they needed to move their campsite because of some creepy guy. These are outdoor girls, and they're independent and confident. And for somebody to make them feel uncomfortable, it had to be a very valid discomfort. That's how they lived. They enjoyed life. They didn't worry about material things," Calvert said. "There's no clear motive. The entire community loved them. They're amazing people." The Grand County Sheriff issued a statement on 8/18/2022. On August 18, 2021, Grand County Sheriff's Office was notified of two deceased females located in the South Mesa area of LaSalle Loop Road in Grand County. At this time, the names of the two individuals are not being released pending notification of family. The cause of death is still under investigation, and two individuals are being transported to the medical examiner's office to determine the cause of death. The case is still under investigation, and additional information will be released at a later time. End quote.
Staff at Woody's Tavern confirmed that the couple was at the bar that weekend before the murders, and they turned over all surveillance that they had to law enforcement. Woody's ownership took to social media to share what they knew was happening.
They wrote, quote, "Hi, this post is regarding the recent tragedy that took place in our town with the two beautiful and innocent lives living beautiful innocent lives being violently taken and the investigation into this horrific crime being thoroughly messed up. There is a lot of incorrect information out there, and I feel it is necessary that I, as an owner of Woody's Tavern, clear some things up. I am not sure if I can get in trouble for saying this, but I feel the truth needs to be told because of all the rumors out there are preventing the investigation from going in the direction it needs to in order to actually be solved."
They continue to say, "It has been said that the two women were last seen alive on Saturday night, leaving our tavern, and that is just simply not true. The two women, along with two of their friends, were in the tavern, but not on Saturday. They were there on Friday, arriving around 6 p.m. and leaving just before 9. My daughter was working, had interaction with the women, and was able to see them the entire time because of where they sat. At no time were they approached by anyone except my staff, and the entire time they were relaxed and enjoying their time with their friends and each other."
These two women were very much in love with each other, and their focus and attention was always on each other. They weren't about attention or misleading anyone. They were just good, kind people and did absolutely nothing to bring this tragedy upon themselves. So all four women left at the same time. No one followed them out the door as well. We have cameras, and I have seen the footage of the entry, exit, and time in between. It has been incredibly frustrating for us because it didn't matter how many times we told the police that they had the wrong day and therefore the wrong time frame on their last days. It did not matter.
We provided the footage from where the women were actually in there and the day they keep saying they were to prove it was Friday, not Saturday. We gave the police the footage of the exit and the area they were sitting, hoping to be of any help we could, but it's like talking to a wall because they just aren't listening. Now they requested footage of the entire bar for days, after which is mind-blowing to us because they will be watching film of events that happened more than likely after they were killed. We don't care about the cameras or the footage. What we care about is that while they are wasting time looking at video that is completely irrelevant to anything, the killer is getting further and further away. The first 48 hours are the most important, and friends and coworkers knew by Sunday something was wrong. Yet it wasn't the police who found them. It was a family friend determined to help.
My daughter had to ask why no one had asked for her statement or her coworkers. Everyone was there when the two victims were in the tavern. I mean, why wouldn't that be something that they did right away? Police say they are confused by the two friends that were there with them, and that is the excuse we keep getting about the day being mixed up. But I know for a fact that one of the girls said it was Friday, so it just doesn't make sense. I asked if there was anyone in particular they were looking for to help them save time and speed up the investigation, but they didn't provide anything in particular.
They go on to say, for some reason, they are determined it had to be someone following them out of the way of the tavern to the mountains that day, and they weren't even there. How does this make any sense or seem logical, especially when everyone who knows them said they felt creeped out by someone next to their campsite, not by someone they came in contact with prior? Why aren't they more focused on that area and other areas that they frequent? The reason being is because they are way over their heads, and the fact that it has dropped the ball is not finding them sooner. And now they are scrambling to grab a hold of the only physical thing out there, which is looking over video that has nothing to do with anything. Which is why it is truly confusing to have the police say that there is no need to be concerned. What do you mean there's no need? Have you caught the killer? Do you even have a clue on who did this? No, you still don't. Don't limit our concerns when two women were just murdered for no reason and don't have a clue and weren't even the ones that found them.
We would once again like to express our condolences to the family and friends of these young women, and we hope and pray that justice is done. If there is anything we can do, please let us know. Thank you for listening. End quote.
I think it's important for us to talk about this. So this Facebook message was Woody's Tavern management, and they were very frustrated by the investigation, and they felt that it was going in the wrong direction. Grand County Sheriff had never handled a homicide investigation this big or this high profile. So they were really doing the best that they could with the resources that they had. This was way, way more than they were used to. And so the community was very frustrated with how the sheriff's office was handling the investigation. I just wanted to make it clear that this wasn't us berating the sheriff's office.
On the 19th of August, the Grand County Sheriff's Office also released a statement that identified the cause of death for the two women. Quote, on August 18th, 2021, the Grand County Sheriff's Office was notified of two deceased females located in the South Mesa area of the LaSalle Loop Road in Grand County, Utah. The two deceased individuals were transported to the medical examiner's office to determine the cause of death. The preliminary investigation conducted by the medical examiner's office determined the cause of death to be from gunshot wounds.
Investigators with the Grand County Sheriff's were able to determine the identities of the two deceased females as follows. Crystal Michelle Turner, age 38, and Kylan Carol Schulte, age 24. The immediate families of the victims have been notified of their passing. The Grand County Sheriff's Office would like to express our deepest sympathies and remorse to the victims' families and friends.
At this time, the Grand County Sheriff's Office is conducting the ongoing homicide investigation. We are currently following up with any leads that come to our attention during the investigation and will continue to be available to people who come forward with that information. The Grand County Sheriff's Office believes there is no current danger to the public of Grand County area.
The Grand County Sheriff's Office would like to thank all of those that have assisted so far in the investigation. We encourage anyone who may have information pertinent to the investigation to please contact the Grand County Sheriff's Office at 435-259-8115. The Grand County Sheriff's Office will provide the public with further information as it becomes available, end quote.
While executing a search warrant, police investigators found a journal, a Bible, newspaper clippings, miscellaneous mail, pay stubs for the two victims, as well as mail for a family member of one of the women. Notes with phone numbers and other handwritten information was all found in the couple's two vehicles, the Kia Sorento and the Ford Econoline van. The Sorento was at the campsite and the van was in a parking lot in Moab. It isn't clear whether the van was moved by someone else or by the victims. According to investigators, a single Samsung cell phone was found at the crime scene and is currently considered evidence. It is unclear who the phone belongs to.
On August 24th, the sheriff's office tells the public that there's no threat to their safety. Then it's on the 25th of August that the bodies of Crystal and Kylan were returned to their families. On August 31st, an anonymous donor offers a $10,000 reward for any information that will result in the arrest of those responsible. Kylan was buried in Montana on that same day. Crystal was laid to rest the next day, and sadly, she was not buried near Kylan. Her family ended up burying her in Arkansas, where they lived. On the 2nd, the reward is increased by another $10,000.
September 16th, law enforcement says they're looking into possible connections between the Brian Laundrie and Gabby Petito case. They then roll out the following day and state there is no connection between Kylan and Crystal's murder and the disappearance of Miss Petito in October. Police executed a search warrant to get information from towers that were in the area of the murder for the date and the surrounding the murder. Also in September, police with the public share the information that they have about the creepy man.
Quote, we are asking that anyone that would have been in the South Mesa area between the dates of August 13th, August 14th, and August 15th to contact our office with anything that they may have heard or seen. The Grand County Sheriff's Office said in a statement on late Tuesday, providing the latest update on the investigation into the killing of Kylan Schulte and Crystal Turner, also known as Crystal Beck.
So on January 19th of this year, police released a new statement. Police believe that the women were killed on August 14th. The, quote, we do have audio recordings from the area with some gunshots around August 14th, says Lieutenant Kim Neal. I'm not going to say the specific time, but let's just say it was in the AM. We can't specifically say if those gunshots are related to our homicide. Police also state that this case has no connection with the Gabby Petito and the Brian Laundrie case. This was confirmed by the FBI using those cell phone records. They announced that there was also no evidence of any type of sexual assault on either woman.
One of the unsealed search warrants detailed a driver who was stopped by a deputy who found the man so unnerving that the veteran law enforcement officer decided to not even write him a speeding ticket, as he did not want to take his eyes off of the man for any moment. This man was considered to be behaving oddly and immediately caught the attention of law enforcement, but eventually this man was excluded as a possible suspect in the murders.
We did file a FOIA request with the Grand County Sheriff's Office to try to get as much information as possible on this case, and they refused to provide any records because they felt that we would jeopardize their investigation. So, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of information related to the case beyond what's already been reported and beyond what the family members of the two women have said. So, where does that leave us now? We're asking anybody to come forward with any information regarding Crystal and Kylan's murder. If you were in the area during the dates of August 13th through the 15th of 2021,
and you may have any footage or information, or maybe you saw something, anything that may help law enforcement with this case, please contact the Grand County Sheriff's Department at 970-725-3343. And unfortunately, that's all we have about the case. It's tragic. It's really sad because in all of the media storm that got surrounded around Gabby Petito, this case kind of got forgotten from the national spotlight, which is why we decided we wanted to bring it today to present it to you. Anything else?
We know it was short. So if y'all have questions, please ask them about our podcast or about the case. We're welcome any questions.
We don't have any more answers on this case, though.
Very true.
Fortunately, yeah.
Hopefully soon we'll have something. They did say that they do have a suspect in this case. They haven't released any name or how he's a suspect or anything like that. But I bet probably in the next few months we'll hear more about it.
Any questions? Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. No questions.
No? No?
Oh.
What's our favorite cult that we have covered? We've covered a lot of cults.
But I think our favorite would be what we're working on a second podcast project right now. Sorry, guys. It's called Surviving Love, and we have started interviewing survivors of the Children of God cult. It is an absolutely insane... We've probably interviewed about 15 survivors, ones that were mainly born into the cult, about their experience growing up. And every time, Whitney and I think we could not hear anything crazier, and it just gets crazier. Mm-hmm. It's going to be coming out this summer sometime. So
the favorite cult I covered is the Aggressive Christian Training Missionaries in New Mexico, which they're just insane and scary.
And she has a microphone for whoever has questions.
Oh, cool.
Oh.
So I'm from Utah, so the case was scary for all of us and was thinking about it a lot. And I know for a fact that there's a lot of police departments in Utah that have not dealt with a lot of murders. Is there a system, or should there be a system for coming in, you know, like a resource that these people can, police departments can come in contact with when they need more help with a case?
I think that it's pretty common for offices, and if I mess this up at all, please correct me, but it's pretty common. I live in New Mexico, which is also very remote, and it's very common for those smaller departments to lean on state police and even the FBI to ask for help with resources, but they have to request that help because the FBI or even the state police can't really exert their authority in that jurisdiction without the permission of that agency. And I know the FBI was involved in this case as well, which is how they got the cell phone tower records and all of that. I still think that probably they waited a little bit too long to act because it was pretty late after the girls had died before they actually started, you know. I mean, I don't know what they did beforehand, but it seems like that looking at from the outside.
What he said.
Oh, got a question here. We got a mic coming to you.
Hi, I just found you guys. And I'm very excited about your podcast. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm trying to think of how to say it. How much did discrimination play a part in them not getting off the ground running in this? And what can we do as people who live far away, don't know anybody in the area? Like, is it just sharing on Facebook? Is it just, you know, coming to things like this, talking about it? I mean, that's a twofold question, but anything we can do.
I would definitely say share. Every time we see, you know, there's always flyers going around on social media. This person's missing, especially National Exploited Children. They are always putting that on Amber Alerts. Definitely sharing, getting the word out there. That is honestly the number one thing anyone can do, and it takes literally a second. So that's what I would recommend.
Like Melissa said, the power of the share is very important. It takes no effort on anybody's part to just click a button to share that information out. The squeaky wheel always gets the grease. To answer your first question, I wish I had better statistics for you. I can't say with confidence that discrimination did play a part, but historically, It has.
Yeah, I think it's important to know that the community seemed to embrace this couple. And everybody who talked about them in loving and endearing terms. And everybody talked about what a beautiful light they had and how in love they were. So could there have been discrimination among the police force? Sure. But we don't have any evidence to prove that. So I don't really feel comfortable saying that it was or not.
I would also think that the area it was, that they were campers, that they lived in a van, also probably played a big role in police not looking right away, thinking, hey, you know, they don't have a permanent residence, so they're probably moving on, looking for a different area. So I definitely think that played a role in not looking as quickly as they should have.
Got a question here.
Good morning. I'm not familiar with your podcast, so thank you for bringing it to my attention. I'm always interested in cults. My question is, have you covered Christian Scientists, and do you consider that cult-like?
We have briefly covered Scientology.
But not Christian Scientists?
Not Christian Scientists. On the list.
You're not...
You mean Scientology?
You mean Scientology. Okay.
We did do a brief episode on it. It is a very deep and confusing religion. And once you get involved in it, you get kind of scared on those Google searches. So we've touched on it. We will probably do more on it in the future, but we've not gone very deep on that one.
I live in the Tampa, St. Petersburg area where it's a big hub. So I've walked by their buildings a few times. Yeah, it's very... There's a lot of Scientologists. That's all I'll probably end with.
Any other questions?
Right back.
Oh, right over there.
Would the gentleman give a few bullet points about the cult that he mentioned? Because I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's Aggressive Christian Missionary Training Corps. And it's out of Gallup, New Mexico, or Grants, New Mexico. I can't remember which one it was. But they... basically, were, of course, an end-of-days cult, and they were training normal citizens. They made them renounce their families and their houses, and they were training them with, like, AK-47s in the desert because they were actually planning to go to war against the evil people that were not in the cult. Eventually, they were arrested because they had sexually and physically abused lots of children. Children that they had stolen from other countries illegally, and the woman who was the wife of the head of the cult was actually just released from prison this year. It's not a good story. It doesn't have a good ending. Sorry.
We do a lot of sad stuff.
Yeah. I especially do sad stuff.
Yes. Eric specializes in sad cases.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any other questions? No? Oh.
Oh, over here.
Hi, for the gentleman, maybe it's too personal, feel free not to share, but what's the story of your baby brother?
Yeah, so I cover it on season 2 of True Consequences, the first 3 episodes. The first episode is an interview with my mom. It's the first time that we've ever talked about it. So what you're hearing is a really raw, emotional conversation about my brother. My brother was a baby. He was 9 months old. My stepdad murdered him. It was child abuse. He was friends with all of the police in the small town that I lived in. He worked for the county. He had the keys to every county office. Jacob Landine, you can Google him. I've been on several shows talking about him. I've been fighting for justice for him for 35 years. Last year, because of the podcast, I was able to get the investigation reopened by the Attorney General. But unfortunately, we haven't really had much progress since then. So I'm going to actively start talking about Jacob's case again. It's a typical, you know, domestic violence, child abuse situation. It was a horrendous nightmare. And I know it's really uncomfortable for a lot of people to listen to stories like that. But it's so important that we talk about this stuff. Because as long as it stays in the shadows, as long as it stays hidden, we can't expect anything to change. And so I'm making it my mission to talk about these difficult cases and hopefully help people in these situations before it gets too far. Because my mom was groomed classically, just like any other domestic violence victim. I was groomed just like any other child sexual abuse victim. He was so well liked in the community that nobody believed that it was possible that he could be that evil. And that's what we're coming up against still. A lot of evidence is missing. He confessed to the murder. We don't have a confession. We don't have a recording. We don't have notes. We don't know where any of that is. So there's a lot of problems with the case, but I'm never giving up. So justice for Jacob. Thanks for asking that. Anyone else?
No?
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
If you want to learn more about Colts Crimes and Cabernet, you can follow the link below in my show notes. And as always, thanks for listening and stay safe, New Mexico.